sing to heaven.
Sing to heaven.
Coptics have the book of scrolls. Numerologists count, they count to seven.
5, 6, 7.
Atheists have rock and roll.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Atheist.
Atheist.
Atheist. Don't have no songs.
Christians have.
Christians have their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Hava Negilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Catholics
dress up for mass
and listen to
Gregorian chants.
Atheists
just take a pass.
Watch football in their underpants. Watch football in their underpants.
Atheists.
Atheists.
Atheists. Don't have no songs.
Don't have no songs.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Christians have
their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Hava Negilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Romantics play
Clair de Lune.
Clair de Lune.
Born again, sing He is Risen. But no one ever wrote a tune.
Wrote a tune.
For godless existentialism.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Some folks sing
a baccantata.
Baccantata.
Lutherans get Christmas trees. Atheist songs add up to nada.
Up to nada.
But they do have Sundays free.
Have Sundays free.
Pentecostals sing. They sing to heaven.
Sing to heaven.
Coptics have the book of scrolls. Numerologists count. They count to seven.
5, 6, 7.
Atheists have rock and roll.
For atheists,
there's no good news.
They'll never sing
a song of faith.
In their songs,
they have a rule.
The he is always lowercase. The he is always lowercase.
Atheist.
Atheist.
Atheist. Don't have no songs.
Christians have
their hymns and pages.
Hymns and pages.
Hava Negilas for the Jews.
For the Jews.
Baptists have the Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Atheists just sing the blues.
Catholics
dress up for mass
and listen to
Gregorian chants.
Atheists just take a pass.
Watch football in their underpants. Watch football in their underpants.
Atheists.
Atheists.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Greg Keeler with Blue Rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Welcome to the lovesick blues boy, Hank Williams. Well, so, Hank, we hope you're going to be around here with us for a long, long time, buddy.
Well, it looks like I'll be doing just that, Red, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, that's fine, just as we're all looking forward to that great Hank Williams hit. What else could it be but the lovesick blues?
I got a feeling called the blues. Oh, Lord, since my baby said
goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is set and sigh. Oh, Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well, Lord, I thought I would.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
All right, starting today with some genuinely very bad news for some horrible people. Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, two of Donald Trump's former election fraud attorneys, although to call them election fraud attorneys suggests that there might have been fraud, which we now know there wasn't. But both Rudy and Sidney have been subpoenaed by the Trump Riot Committee, the House committee investigating the January 6th Trump riots. This is very bad news for them and very bad news for Trump. And Sidney Powell has not been having an easy go of it. Newsweek reporting, Rudy and Sidney subpoenaed by 1-6 committee. Will they comply? The House committee investigating the January 6th riot has subpoenaed Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, Sidney Powell and Boris Epstein, all attorneys in the 2020 re-election campaign of then President Trump. It's unclear whether any of them will comply. Many of Trump's former associates like Steve Bannon and Mark Meadows have not. Some have invoked the Fifth Amendment to avoid testifying. The committee wrote in a Tuesday evening tweet, the four individuals advanced unsupported theories about election fraud, pushed efforts to overturn election results, or were in direct contact with the former president. The Hill likewise reporting on these subpoenas, saying that the subpoena goes after the core of Trump's legal team after the November 3rd election, a group that prepared legal arguments following his loss and pushed his baseless claims of election fraud alongside campaign efforts on the focused on the congressional certification. The Select Committee is looking into the causes that contributed to the violence on January 6th, including attempts to promote unsupported claims of election fraud and pressure campaigns to overturn the 2020 election results. The subpoena to Giuliani focuses on his ability to offer insight into Trump's state of mind in the days around the riots, as well as his work pushing fraud claims on TV and in courtrooms. The committee wrote, you actively promoted claims of election fraud on behalf of former President Trump and sought to convince state legislators to take steps to overturn the election. Anna Cabrera from CNN reports that that Sidney Powell's attorney says she will appear before the January 6th committee and answer questions, but that Powell also still believes there indeed was election fraud. So this is potentially a really, really big deal. And there's a few different pieces to this that I think are important. The first one is it's very clear that this, if you imagine concentric circles of sorts with Donald Trump at the middle of that circle, the entire probe is getting closer and closer to Donald Trump himself. Now, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani talking about, you know, records from Ivanka Trump and from Eric Trump and Kimberly Guilfoyle. And we're wondering, will they next go to Ivanka Trump and Don Jr.? What's going on there? It's very clear that it's closing in, but will anything come of it? The second piece of this is the increasingly important timing of the investigation into the January 6th Trump riots. And the reason that that's increasingly a factor is that we are now only 9.5 or so months from the 2022 midterms. Now, as I've said before, I don't believe that any October surprise stemming from the investigation will really have an impact on the midterms. I can't. It's hard for me to imagine what could come out of the report that we don't really kind of know already, and importantly, that would change the way Republicans would vote in the midterms. I don't think there would be anything, but that doesn't change the fact that if Republicans do take the House in November and are sworn in January, the entire investigation is over overnight. The committee's disbanded if Republicans take control of the House in November. So it would be important, even if it's not going to change the minds of any Republicans, to have a finished report from the House Select Committee on the January 6th Trump riots before it's prematurely ended if Republicans indeed do take control of the House in November. So those are the considerations. And the committee does seem to be moving relatively quickly as they can. And the question of what to do about the people ignoring the subpoenas is an important question. And it takes time to resolve that as the legal system functions and moves forward much more slowly than we would like. But not a good day for Rudy Giuliani. Not a good day for Sidney Powell either. I want to very quickly look at this very strange interview. I didn't see this until yesterday. We covered this Trump rally that took place in Florence, Arizona over the weekend. We covered the rally itself and we talked about it earlier this week on the show. But there was this interview done by Newsmax of Trump, seemingly at the rally. And it is, of course, Trump's visibly sweaty and disheveled, his shirt's open. You know, the guy's just a mess. But it is very clear that Trump is on a war path, on a war footing, we might say, against Mitch McConnell and sort of what he sees as the establishment Republican Party, not very favorable to him. Let's look at some of these clips. This is a very interesting interview here, Trump addressing Fauci and his handling of the pandemic.
We heard some lock him up chants for Dr. Fauci out there. What about holding Dr. Fauci accountable?
Well, he is accountable. He's somebody that has done some pretty poor work. You know, with me, he wanted to keep it open to China, keep it open to Europe. We would have lost hundreds of thousands more people.
Now, it's important to remember that even, you know, some of these things may be true by chance because Trump sometimes might like sort of casually tell the truth by mere probability. But, you know, the whole thing about Fauci wanted to keep it open. There was a brief period during which Fauci was saying, Mr. President, sir, I'm unsure whether stopping flights is really going to contain this. And Fauci was sort of right. I mean, so even every single one of these statements could really be looked at in more detail. And they're really not truths.
But he wasn't a big factor in my administration. But Biden has made him a big factor. And they have done a horrible job on COVID. Or the China virus, as I call it. But they've done a horrible job.
What would you be doing differently right now when it comes to COVID?
It's actually a good question. That's a good question from Newsmax.
Well, one thing, no mandates. The mandates are killing our economy. I'm convinced that when you have supply chain problems, you can't get paper, you can't get lumber, they can't build houses, they have no nails, they have nothing. And I think to start off with, the mandates are...
There is no evidence at all that vaccine requirements at businesses are what is causing supply chain issues. There's just no evidence of that.
Disaster, and people just aren't working. You can't get people to work because of the mandate. So that would be the first thing I'd do.
Almost a non-factor. As many of you know, we have seen that mandates ultimately lead to, you know, like at most half of 1% or 1% staff loss. And there are many places where it's zero because everybody's obviously vaccinated anyway. You know, there's just no evidence for what Trump is saying. Trump also asked about the situation at the border, which is interesting because, quite frankly, very little has changed at the border under Joe Biden.
We got a charged up crowd out there, and they're very excited to see you, very excited to see Kerry Lake. This is going to be an important state in 2022. What do you think is the most important election issue for the voters of 2022 in Arizona?
I think the borders for Arizona certainly are. And, that, you know, the whole country is a border if you think about it. You know, well, they're pouring throughout the country, but
not really.
For Arizona and Texas in particular, the borders are a terrible, terrible problem. We have millions of people coming into our country.
Now, understand that there has been no major change to the dynamics at the border in terms of people coming in, other than there was a period in 2020 due to the pandemic where movement in general was down. And so you combine the seasonality of border crossings with the pandemic. There was a lull and then it resumed and it started resuming in December of 2020 and January of 2021, even when Donald Trump was still president, continued under Biden. So there's the seasonality aspect and the pandemic aspect. But there's not been this, according to the right and people like Trump, the day Biden took office, everything changed at the border and it was like wide open, come on in. And it's just not true.
You know, many are coming from prisons of other countries. Over 129 countries, they said last week. There are people from 129 countries. It's not just like Mexico and Honduras and, you know, et cetera. It's, they had 129 countries.
So Trump's still very confused about everything, but as well as immigration. And then this is where it gets very interesting. Trump going right in on Mitch McConnell. This is clearly a battle that Trump is not going to give up on. And this is going to be interesting to watch throughout 2022.
When it comes to the leadership of the GOP right now, what kind of letter grade would you give them? Speaker or Senator, Leader McCarthy and McConnell.
Well, I've been working well with Kevin and we've been doing very well together and we're working on the election and I'd give him a very high mark.
Now, what that means is McCarthy has mostly remained loyal to me in my insane claims that I really won the election. That's what Trump means by that.
I'm not a fan of McConnell. I haven't been. I helped him get elected. Without me, he would have lost his race. And then he goes and makes stupid statements after January 6th, which...
And what that means is McConnell has not remained blindly loyal to me to the same degree as I would like to see.
It was not my situation. This was just a stupid thing he did. But he's a bad leader. He gave them 2 months. That 2 month stay, that 2 month of adjustment gave them a power that they should have never had. So I'm not a fan of him, and I think he's hurting the party very badly.
So that is absolutely fascinating. And it is really clear, guys, that the Trump-McConnell battle is not going to subside anytime soon. Now, whether McConnell cares, I don't know. I don't know how much longer Mitch McConnell wants to be a senator. I don't know how much he cares. But as we get into 2022, with Trump endorsing people and the Republican Party, of which the Senate is a big piece, deciding how they want to direct resources and effort, including financial and public relations resources, this McConnell versus Trump thing could get very, very interesting. My interest in it is very, it's self-centered, quite frankly. It's selfish. I want there to be as much chaos between the Trump and the McConnell wings of the Republican Party as possible, with the hope that it'll mess them up and with the hope that it will make it difficult for them to do well in November. That's my priority. Let me know your thoughts on that. You can find me on Twitter at @DPacman. We'll take a break. And what a program we have for you today. Remember that you can support the David Pacman Show by grabbing a membership at joinpacman.com. It's cheap. It's easy. It feels very good. And you can use the coupon code WOW22 to get a borderline illegal discount off of your membership. Joinpacman.com is the place to do it. Let's hear from you, the people that make this all possible. Without you, I'm a guy in a room with a mic, and it's very, very sad. Let's first hear via Discord from Alex from Baltimore. Remember that it is davidpacman.com/discord. That's the place to go. Alex, you're on. What's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cool. So I have a question about, I guess, America in general. So especially if you listen to more left news and opinion, it's basically the opinion that America can't do anything right. Everything about America sucks. Is there anything that America is actually still better or the best in the world at? That's actually positive. I don't mean, you know, gun deaths and incarceration numbers or anything like that.
Well, listen, I mean, here, I don't agree. Who has that perspective on the left, first of all?
Well, I guess no one says it outright.
Okay.
But I guess
it Who do you think believes it?
So I guess instead of, I guess it would be more, I don't want to throw other shows on blast.
Here, let's put it a different, I think I have a good way to couch it, which is
okay.
Because the left wants things to be so much better, sometimes it sounds like the left thinks the U.S. is much worse than the right, like the U.S. is much more down on the U.S. Is that fair? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. And I guess if you were to consume so much of that news, it would be easy to fall into that trap.
Right.
I was just curious, is there anything that America is actually just as good, if not better than, say, Western Europe, who we're always comparing ourselves to?
Listen, the U.S. is by nature of being so geographically large and diverse, by nature of having so many people, and by nature of having so many different industries that are possible in the country, has so many things that other countries would dream of. When it comes to the, you know, so many of the best universities in the world are in the U.S. So many of the best medical facilities in the world are in the U.S. When you look at medical advancements, so many come in the United States. Technological, culture, you know, all these different things. I think there's no question about that. I think where the left chimes in and says, whoa, hold on a second, is that someone like me, a social democrat, believes so much of the good that comes from those things is reserved for a very small slice of the population and is not helping such large swaths of the people in the U.S. But yeah, without a doubt, the U.S. I mean, listen, I could live somewhere else, but I choose to live in the United States because there are a lot of great things about the country and there's a lot of things that need to be fixed.
Gotcha. No, that's a good insight. You know, that I appreciate that. I do have I like to ask you travel questions. I appreciate that you humor me on them, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
Do you ever take into consideration the government in question when you travel to a place? For example, I'm getting into the history of China, and I would love to go see their history and culture, but the CCP is pretty horrible. Do you ever consider such things when you travel, or should we?
I do, and I think I do. I consider it, and to say whether we should really depends on the individual. And listen, Alex, I don't know what's making so much noise in the background, but it's crazy. I don't know if you're running some kind of a, you know, hydraulic pump or something.
No, a guy was driving by on a cart with
so here's
stuff.
The thing.
Sorry,
I consider it at the end of the day, if given the opportunity to go to like Russia or China when things settle down, I would do it because I want to learn about it. It doesn't mean I endorse the government. You know, because my family's from Argentina, I've traveled to Argentina during every government, almost all of which I am not a big fan of. So, yes, I consider it and I would factor it in. But ultimately, it's up to every individual to decide what am I getting out of this versus am I tacitly supporting the government by even going? And it's a very personal decision.
Right. And China is a good example, because if you support a business, you are supporting the government because they're so intertwined.
Yes.
Usually.
Less so than in the past, but to some degree. Yeah. Good questions, Alex. Well, I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. There's Alex from Baltimore with some very, very strong questions and some really interesting stuff going on in the background as well. Let's go over to the UK and talk to George from the UK. George, where in the UK are you? George?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi there. I'm just outside of London, about an hour away from London to the west, called
Beautiful.
Swindon.
Not love
the
it.
Most, not the most glamorous town, but still pretty good.
That's good.
I have a question about COVID restrictions, especially in the post-vaccine world.
Yep.
So countries like the UK and Australia, what we've done is, you know, once the majority of the population is vaccinated, especially older people,
yes,
we've kind of had a let it rip approach.
Right.
And obviously it's very different in the US because of the kind of political situation and the decentralized system there. But here in the UK, a bit of a let it rip approach. And I'm not the biggest fan of Boris Johnson. There's lots of things, you know, to criticize him for. But I think this is one thing that you've got right in the case where you put your faith in the vaccines and then you open up the economy and you basically let the virus do its thing. And I think my understanding is, on balance, when you balance health, economy, et cetera, I think that's the right thing. Did you have an opinion on this approach? Do you think it's better to be more cautious or kind of just let things happen?
The answer is different depending on what is happening at the time. There was a moment where the vaccines were very good at preventing people from getting sick at all. But now we have a situation where the vaccines are better at preventing people from getting seriously ill and dying on average. Remember, on average. And the virus is now so transmissible that there really is no containing it. So I think the right approach changes as the circumstances on the ground change. Now, as far as the UK moving in the direction of removing all COVID restrictions, including masking, which, remind me, is it in 60 days that that's happening, or when is that happening?
So that is now happening in about 10 days.
In about 10 days. Okay. When it comes to that, when you look at, you know, you guys are ahead of the US in terms of the Omicron wave, you're already well on the decline. If you believe that at this point it is becoming endemic, that Omicron has burned through the population, and at least until next flu season, things are going to be well controlled, it doesn't seem crazy to me to say, listen, the vaccines have been available for a year. We have a less severe but very contagious variant, which is still more serious than a cold, but much less serious than the previous ones. If we can keep the medical system from being overwhelmed while removing restrictions, at a certain point, I understand that countries are going to do it and it doesn't seem crazy. Now, if in the fall there's a much more deadly variant and there's a different situation, my opinion might change. But the numbers point to me understanding why the UK is doing what it's doing now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a good gamble politically as well, because you have all these, you know, the opposition last year in the face of the Delta wave, we didn't really do too much. And then in Omicron, we didn't do, you know, we changed hardly anything as well.
Yes.
And you have now, you know, the opposition were calling for more restrictions, further lockdowns and things like that. And now the Conservative government can turn around and say, you know, we didn't lock down, we saved the economy, and we kept the country open. And
yes,
you know, it's a good thing politically as well as hopefully health wise as well.
As long as it doesn't backfire. Yeah. Hey, listen, exactly. I'm curious. You know how there's all these clever pub names in the UK? You know, you've got like the Spotted Pig and the Herpetic Frog and all these different things. Is there a particularly clever pub name in your town?
Not really. Well, Swindon is very known for its like railway history. So there's lots of railway named pubs, the Steam Inn and things like that.
Got
Nothing
it.
Too kind of cheeky in Swindon. It's too boring for that.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can get something opened up there.
Hopefully, yeah.
Very good. All right. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
All right. Wow. George from the UK. What a beautiful phone call. Why don't we go next to let's go to, is it Nathan from Green Acres, Florida?
Hello. Hello, David. How are you doing?
Where is Green Acres?
Green Acres, Florida is in Palm Beach County. It's in between Wellington and Lake Worth.
Oh, so it's sort of like Trump country, right?
I could drive to Trump. To Trump's Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's interesting. Well, what's on your mind?
Yeah. So, hello. I've been watching your show for years. It's a privilege to speak with you.
The privilege is mine.
I am Nathan. I am in the city of Green Acres. I'm a candidate for city council. But recently, there's been some drama, which I think relates to national politics in a way.
Okay.
So, we know that the right wing is going hard on the cancel culture narrative. They think they're being censored. They think they're being canceled. Anybody with like two brain cells knows that that's nonsense. You know,
sure.
Social media is constantly pushing like Shapiro and all that stuff. But recently in a city council meeting, the mayor, who happens to be a Democrat, was censored by three members, two Republicans and one Democrat. But I hear that it's like a Democrat in name only.
Okay.
And I just wanted to share that because it's interesting. He wanted to dispel. Excuse me.
Oh my God.
He wanted to dispel a rumor, and they adjourned the meeting. And the footage is on the mayor's Facebook page, recorded by an amazing member of the community in the crowd. I wonder who that is. And yeah.
Are you originally from Florida?
Yeah, whole life. Lived in Palm Beach County.
Because I don't want to get off the substance, but the word that I say mayor, you say mare, almost like a horse, you know, a female horse, M-A-R-E. Is that a local thing there?
I'm not sure. I always say mayor.
Mayor. That's interesting. Well, listen, yeah. It all sounds like more of the same. You know, they claim the other side is doing that which they do, and it's projection, and we're used to it at this point, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, I get in, and we don't have that censorship, and there's a bit more stability in the council. But until then, those three have the majority, because the way the system is, there's the mayor, the deputy mayor, who's a council member, and then the three others. The mayor has no voting power, so those three have a voting block, and they're able to essentially censor, stop progress, whatever they want to do.
Yes.
And right now, all three of them are being challenged, including by myself. And it's shaping up to be an interesting race. Now, I wish the media would pay a little bit more attention to, but...
All right. No, well, Nathan giving us the inside scoop on the politics of Green Acres, Florida. Nathan, I appreciate hearing from you, and we're going to do our best to keep an eye on all of it, quite frankly. We are going to follow all of it. Let's go next to Muhammad from, I can't actually see where, somewhere that starts with the letter T. Where are you calling from, Muhammad?
I'm from Troy, Michigan.
Michigan?
Troy,
Michigan. Oh, okay. All right. Yes. Muhammad from Troy. Go ahead.
Hello. Basically, I wanted to discuss with you my thoughts on midterms, especially since this is probably hopeful/wishful thinking, but
yeah,
I feel like based on things that are happening in recent days, especially with the far right wing just refusing to take the vaccine and basically making up miracle cures and disproportionately dying.
Yes.
I hate that I have to sort of bring a political, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but basically I think this will hurt them in the midterms.
Let me see if I can understand what you're saying, Muhammad. Are you saying that at this point the deaths are skewing towards Republicans so much that they might literally kill enough voters to lose some races? Is that the idea?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, like, theoretically.
But basically they're saying that, like, midterms like 2022 is going to be a red wave year. Based on how things are going right now, they are losing that red wave year.
I don't know about that, Muhammad. I'm not so sure about that. And here's the thing about it. The turnout is typically so low in midterms. And although there's absolutely a partisan gap in who's dying from COVID, you need that partisan gap to overwhelm the fact that the party that loses the White House in one year tends to vote at a much higher rate in that first midterm. So you're completely right. In a general sense, I don't know that that's actually the way it's going to go. I think we need to assume there will be a red wave and make sure we're fighting against it at every opportunity. I would be really careful.
Yeah, I don't. What I was trying to say, I was thinking like, yeah, there will probably be like a red wave in the sense of like, oh, Republicans will like maybe take back the House and,
yep.
Possibly take back the Senate if things go well for them, but like based on how things are going right now, because like people like everyone in like media and otherwise was saying like 2020 was supposed to be a blue wave year and it was an utter disaster for Democrats in 2020 because they lost about over a dozen seats in the House,
right?
They barely won the Senate because of the big lie and people like Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell literally saying don't vote.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think the takeaway, Muhammad, is we've got to not assume the outcome, and we must all go out and vote in every race that we have available to us. Muhammad from Troy, Michigan, I appreciate the call. We are going to go to a very short break. If you're holding, don't hang up, because we're going right back to the phones in a moment. All right, let's hear from some more people. You can get in touch with me through our Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's go next to Aaron from Los Angeles, California. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello, David. I've just had, some questions regarding FCC standards and everything. Like, do you think that media companies, do you think the FCC should bring back the fairness doctrine that they had back in the 80s in order to make, I guess, representation of diverse ideas on all networks more palpable? And secondly, like, just as someone that has a little bit of experience in, like, I guess, community radio, like, I'm very, very skeptical of adding new regulations on, like, anything, new FCC regulations in particular.
Yeah, I think the cat is out of the bag on this. I do not think bringing, because the media landscape has changed so much, I've said before, I don't think bringing back the fairness doctrine is really going to achieve what maybe we hope it would achieve. So much now of media consumption is internet based in all ways. Even people in cars now have hotspots. And I do not think that in a way that is subject to FCC jurisdiction, you're really going to be able to accomplish what one imagines you might be able to accomplish with it. So I think we need to be fighting this in other ways. And we've talked before about what those ways are, but I would not waste, I believe it's a waste of energy to focus on an FCC based fairness doctrine to sort of like fix the problems in media right now.
I agree. And I also just think that like a lot of the outright regulations that that the FCC has, just more harms independent creators and like independent like outlets and university outlets, as opposed to, you know, the major conservative political talk networks that have been getting away through loopholes for decades.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. And I think that this is really going to come from, you know, I hate to say this because it's like sometimes it feels like if you just put in some law, you fix everything, when the real solution is more complicated. The media problem is heavily based on such a total lack of media literacy in the country, where if we had better education around media literacy, we would not even need to be thinking about a lot of these other solutions that are much more legally based. And it's a long term solution. I know you can't fix that overnight, but I continue to believe that's where the solution lies.
It's just so puzzling to me how that's just such a major thing, how media literacy is just not prevalent, especially because in American education systems, they prioritize so much about reading and writing.
Yes.
At a young age from kindergarten, but it's not translating over. Our English education isn't teaching us these types of skills at all.
And case in point, there are countries that start teaching reading and writing later than the U.S. Everybody still ends up at the same level, but their media literacy ends up ahead. And I believe part of it is, this is just an opinion based on some things I've read, at ages 4, 5, 6, instead of jumping in prematurely into reading and writing, there's more about thinking. And I think it is something that just should be thought about, is all I'm saying.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Well, thank you, David.
All right, Aaron from Los Angeles, thanks very much. I do appreciate that. Great to hear from you. Let's go next to... where do we want to go next? I mean, there's just so many people that want to talk. How about Colin from Iowa? Colin, you're next.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Wow, this is really an honor, David, sir. I've been such a fan of the show.
The honor is mine.
My main choice for any news that I do.
Beautiful.
Wow, this actually happened. I'm sorry. I'm a little starstruck.
You're doing great. You're doing great. Did you have a question today?
I do have a question.
Okay.
It's a little bit on the lighter side, I'd say. I mean, obviously, I would talk about COVID or whatever, but this is just something that I've heard recently among like a lot of liberals or whatever. It's about...
Okay.
Well, I'm from Iowa, obviously, and marijuana is illegal there. So I was like thinking, I think I said something along the lines of like, what if Biden were to like, President Biden were to like decriminalize marijuana? If it's decriminalized in a lot of states, and from what I've heard, a lot of the decriminalized states, because I also live in Illinois, like Illinois is my second home, I guess you can say. And like, it's legal here and there really hasn't been a problem there. So what do you think about like the decriminalization of marijuana nationally? And if Joe Biden were to do that, how do you think that would affect his popularity?
I think his popularity would increase significantly if he were to decriminalize. I think there's a lot of people who would prefer that Joe Biden federally legalize marijuana. I think there are different opinions as to whether he could do that. But aside from that, it's just not going to be the next step. I think the next step, the logical next step in the progression would be decriminalization. I think it would be incredibly popular overall if he did it. There would be people that are mad for sure. But when you're talking about decriminalizing, you're not saying legal recreational pot shops on every corner the way right wingers love to fearmonger about. So they wouldn't be able to do that. They might say it's the first step towards that. But I think it would be popular. I would love for him to do it. And I'm 100% in favor of that.
Yeah, I totally agree, David. And for one thing, for living in Iowa, like I'll reveal a little bit about myself. I live in the Quad Cities, so I'm on the Iowa side of the Quad Cities, and I don't know anybody personally that like smokes, but from what I've heard, a lot of like the people on my campus, they will like drive over just a few miles just to get to like Rock Island to Moline, and then they get the pot and then they bring it back to Davenport. I think that is just kind of ridiculous.
So now I just want to make sure I understand, because some people may not be familiar with all of those. You're saying they drive over into Illinois to buy the legal pot.
Yes, the Quad Cities, there's an Iowa side and an Illinois side.
Got it.
Since the Illinois side is the legal side, you just drive over and then pick it up.
Right.
Which, yeah, that's just a Quad City secret for you. If you
got
know.
It. All right. Well, the secret is now out. Very, very much appreciate the call. And certainly. A little quick on the trigger finger there. Very much appreciate the call. I am in favor of decriminalization and legalization. I think I am for both. I am for both. Let's go to Jason from Huntsville, Alabama. Jason, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how's it going, David?
Going well.
All right. I know we have a queue of callers, so I'll try to keep it short, like one or two questions. One of the things I was rattling, kind of thinking about was how Congress just usually tends to have, this kind of goes back to Neil deGrasse Tyson, how he talked about when he was a kid, he would look up to like leaders and powerful, I guess, inspiring leaders. And when he looks at Congress, all he sees is businessman, businessman, politician, law, businessman, businessman. Like where are the scientists, where are the engineers? And I yes. thought, wouldn't it be better? I'm sorry about the noise. If there were more, a greater diversity of professions, especially if there were more scientists and engineers in office, or also architects, doctors, just civil engineers, just a great diversity of multiple professions and perspectives in Congress.
Yes, yeah. I've spoken about this many times before. Absolutely. We should be having people representing us from a much wider range of industries and professions, for sure. No doubt about it. It's hard to argue against that.
And yeah, that's because I remember Bill Nye, you know, this science guy, argue. I used to believe it would be a lot better if only, like, if there were a lot more scientists and engineers
yeah.
were in office. But he would come along and say, if there were only scientists and engineers in office, that wouldn't improve anything, because that's just still one perspective.
For sure.
Another quick question. I thought a lot about, of course, Donald Trump. He's still relevant. People are still talking about him. It would be more appropriate that if he ever gets held accountable, instead of being jailed or prison, which is unlikely, wouldn't it be more appropriate if he was submitted for psychological evaluation and admitted into a mental institution?
It's fine. Yes, it would make sense to figure out once and for all what is going on with his mental state. But, it's very difficult, particularly for people in his position to forcibly submit to that. So I don't know that it's worth spending too much time thinking and talking about it, because it's not going to happen, you know?
That's unfortunate. I mean, wouldn't there be a chance that it could be court ordered?
Yes, there's obviously a chance, but I can't imagine any path towards that being what happens.
Yeah. Well, it's a thought I had. All right. I'll hand over my call to the next.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. I very much appreciate it. And a lot of different things on people's minds today, which is great. Let's go next to Vitaly from Israel. Vitaly, you are on the air.
Hello. I wasn't expecting to be selected.
Wow. Well, here we are.
Thanks anyways.
Yeah.
I have a more geopolitical question. But sure. Also it pertains to perhaps United States. Now with the tensions in Ukraine, we are possibly are going to into a confrontation between NATO, United States, Ukraine, and Russia. In your mind, what do you think like the consensus in the United States would be? If like a public opinion, if it would be escalating to a war,
you're saying like a boots on the ground type war,
any kind of armed conflict.
Yeah, Vitaly, if you can, please turn off notifications in Discord because we can hear every time that it blings and it's very, very distracting to the audience. My belief is that by a small margin, the American people would be in favor of the U.S. and NATO coming to the defense of Ukraine against hostilities from Russia by a small margin. That's my prediction about what would happen.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Vitaly from Israel. There we go. Yeah, always remember to turn off Discord notifications. Very, very important. Let's go next to Logan from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Logan, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Sorry, I'm in the car. I just got out of class.
You're doing great.
So I was just calling to ask a question about 2024.
Sure.
Do you think it might be better if it was Trump running? Considering the idea of turnout to vote against Trump, like in 2020, it was more of a vote against Trump than for Biden.
You're saying, would it be better for Democrats if Trump was the nominee?
Right, better for Democrats. Like, personally, I think it would be worse for Democrats if it was like DeSantis or someone like that.
So here's my thought on this. This is a really good question. If it's Biden versus Trump, I think Trump wins. If it's Kamala versus Trump, I think Trump wins. I think the one way that it's better for Democrats if it's Trump is if there is an actual sort of more inspiring and dynamic Democratic nominee. I don't know who that would be. I don't even know if the person exists. But my point here is, I think if it's seen as a rematch of 2020, I think Trump wins. If it's tired, old, crazy Trump again versus someone else that's interesting, I think in that case, it's better for Democrats. But it's very, very risky. It's a risky proposition.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for taking my call.
All right. Logan from Kenosha. Great to hear from you. That's going to do it for our calls today. We will take calls again next week, and I look forward to hearing from you then. All right, it's Friday. Let's get into this week's mailbag. Remember, you can email info@davidpakman.com with your thoughts, your questions, your anything really. Just try to reduce the abuse in the email. And don't send 10 emails a day. You'll get yourself flagged directly into the trash. And we've sadly, there's like 50 people now getting auto filtered directly into the trash. OK, let's start. Today's first email is actually not an email. It's from Twitter, where a user named Akbar said, David, who does your vetting for your calls? It seems like a large portion is just trolling you and getting you to answer questions that are asked in bad faith, pretending to be progressive. You know, there are a lot of really fair critiques of our phone callers, including that they take 5 minutes to get to the question, that they call from really loud places, that they don't really have anything to ask, but just kind of want to rant for a while. There's a lot of really good critiques. I don't think this critique is accurate, that people are trolling me and asking bad faith questions. I have never gotten that impression. And that they're pretending to be progressive. If anybody can even point to one specific such call, if this is happening, it's going completely over my head and I should be aware of it. So please let me know if there are specific calls that meet that definition, because I haven't seen them. Here's another message via Facebook. You are a habitual liar. Now, you know, you can say, hey, David, sometimes you get things wrong. You can say, David, sometimes when it's statistics or math or calculus related elements on the show, you get them wrong. Or sometimes you get a fact wrong. But one of the things I don't do here is lie to you or tell you that I believe things that I don't really believe. Everything I say on the program, I really believe, and I believe to be true at the time. And sometimes I get things wrong. And when I am aware of it, I will apologize. I throw myself at the mercy of the audience and I issue a correction. I will do that a few emails from now because I was corrected about something. But this is not a program where I lie to the audience or pretend to have beliefs that I don't, either because I think it will be more interesting or generate more clicks or views or whatever the case may be. I don't do that. There are shows that do it and I won't name them. Partially because I don't watch them, but there are shows, I'm sure, that do that. But this is not one of them. All right. OK, Joe wrote in. Joe says, hey, David, I was scrolling through Facebook when I noticed one of my anti-vax Facebook friends who's a nurse share the below post from Halifax Health in Florida. I can't wrap my head around why a hospital would share this. How do we fight this nonsense? This is food to anti-vax Republicans. Can you look into it? So what Joe is referring to is that Halifax Health shared something showing that a lot of the people in the hospital were vaccinated with COVID, that there were a bunch of vaccinated people in the hospital. And as I've said before, one of the things we must understand is that as more and more people are vaccinated, the odds by sheer base rates that more of the hospitalized are vaccinated goes up. What we have to understand is your relative risk. As I said before, the thought experiment is in a country where you have 100% vaccination, anyone who's hospitalized will be vaccinated. Does that mean the vaccines don't reduce the risk of hospitalization? Of course not. And as we've seen many times before, you know, I'm making up numbers here. Imagine you have 70% vaccination and 40% of the hospitalized are vaccinated. Well, that's a much larger share of the population, and they are relatively a much smaller portion of the hospitalized. And as we've seen before, the risk reduction for hospitalization or death from COVID is significant. I don't even remember the latest numbers at this point because we continue to get more and more precise numbers, but you have to understand the relative risk. And Joe is not wrong. It is food or fodder for anti-vax Republicans because they don't understand the meaning of the numbers. If they understood math and base rates, then it would not be anti-vax fodder. Unfortunately, they don't, and therefore it is. Okay, Steve wrote to me. Here's an interesting perspective from Steve or Steven. Trump's vaccine advocacy is an indicator he doesn't intend to run in 2024. Steve writes, David, knowing that everything Trump does is to benefit himself, why is he now promoting the vaccine, knowing it will cost him potential voters? Perhaps he's more concerned about his legacy Might this be an indicator that he does not intend to run in 2024? At this point, I have no idea. This is one argument that can be made. Trump is now going fully for vaccines because he doesn't care about the repercussions. The problem is he's not really going fully. He's still talking about you should have your freedoms and I'm not sure about vaccinating kids and all these different things. So I reject that he's really going that much pro-vaccine. But the counterpoint that some people have wrote to me, have written to me and said, some people who wrote to me said, is that what Trump is doing is getting ahead of the fact that it does seem plausible that in the next year, COVID will be dramatically reduced. It'll go into an endemic phase. And he wants to make sure that as that happens, people think of him and the vaccines. So you can pick any interpretation you want. I don't know that we're really going to know what Trump's thinking is at this point in time. Eric wrote, Eric's making this exact point. By the way, this is not the crazy anti-vax Eric in Mass. This is a different Eric in Mass. He says, hey, David, do you think Trump's recent endorsement of the vaccine is being caused by some health officials forecasting that the COVID pandemic is hopefully winding down? Maybe he's realizing there will be something to take credit for soon. So rather than belittling it, he's better off taking credit for it. Thanks. This is exactly what I was just suggesting that some people were writing to me about. Must have been in my head because we had this email here. That's another interpretation of Trump now saying the vaccines are good, the vaccines are safe, and I made them. This is just as plausible an explanation. Okay, Mr. H wrote to me about Dr. Anthony Fauci and says, greetings, is it possible that Dr. Fauci may need to seek political asylum if the Republicans gain full control of the government? Regards. I am not willing to accept that Dr. Fauci would need to leave the country for safety if Republicans take over in November. Now, a lot of really bad things are likely to happen if Republicans take over in November. There's no question about that. But particularly because he has armed security, which is insane that Dr. Fauci needs it, but he does. I believe that Dr. Fauci will be able to safely stay in the United States, even if Republicans gain full control of the government in 2024 or control of the House and or Senate in 2022. If you have a different perspective on Dr. Fauci's safety, by all means, let me know. Olav wrote in about a mathematical error, which I always want to correct. He says, David, sir, in your January 12th show, you claimed 1% and 0.5% were imaginary numbers when talking about Omicron giving fewer hospitalizations. In mathematics, imaginary numbers are well defined. It's real numbers multiplied by an imaginary unit I. I is defined as if you square it, it equals minus one. I would rather use made up numbers instead of imaginary. This is a completely fair critique. I said the other day, these are imaginary numbers, and it really was not precise. What I meant was I'm making these numbers up. Imaginary numbers have a precisely defined meaning in math, and I apologize if I confused anybody with that. Ruth wrote in, and Ruth says, the future of the United States scares me. Ruth says, hi, David. I've been listening to your show for about a year. I really appreciate your reporting on current events. After listening to yourself and others, I'm very concerned about the future of the U.S. Me too. Lately, I have been considering moving out of the U.S. I was wondering if you've ever thought about this yourself or if you think the U.S. will turn around. Yeah, I mean, listen, I always have, you know, we learn more and more about kind of people's, there's this return to the mean thing, where we learn that people seem to have different levels of kind of natural optimism, satisfaction, and happiness, and individual events will push and pull us one way or the other, but that most people, unless they work really hard, have kind of a natural mean or status quo. And my status quo is kind of like cautious optimism, but let's make sure we have a backup plan in place. So as many of you know, I was born in Argentina. I could move back to Argentina anytime. That's one backup. Now, for the last many decades, it's not been an appealing thing because things have been worse in Argentina than in the U.S. in many, many different ways. So that's one backup. Number two is I could move to Israel and obtain citizenship there. So that's a backup. And the third backup that I'm waiting on or working on right now is there. I have, many of you might know, I have family roots in Poland. My family from Poland on my maternal grandfather's side fled Poland because of the Holocaust, fled to Argentina. There is a provision where if you can prove your lineage and that your family left under those circumstances, you can get a Polish passport, which would give me EU access, full EU access. I am working on that. It's really difficult because by its nature, the records that prove that lineage from Poland are potentially non-existent because they were burned up in the Holocaust. The part of Poland that my family is from is now part of Belarus. As many of you know, the political situation in Belarus is complex. There are not exactly good working relationships between Belarus and Poland. So if anybody here is in Belarus and might be able to help me get the documents I need, get in touch. But that's my third backup that I'm working on. And I have not seriously considered permanently leaving the U.S. But certainly I am worried enough about the future of the U.S. that I want to have a plan in place. So that's a long answer, Ruth, but I hope I've answered it to your satisfaction. Email info@davidpakman.com if you have anything that you want to see in the mailbag. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. Use the coupon code WOW22 to get a discount, and we'll see you either on the bonus show today.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
WRCT, in sound, from way out. WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth. The cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We don't have to imagine what it's going to look like when the court overturns Roe v. Wade. This film shows you what it looks like when abortion providers and the women they serve are forced underground.
Saturday marked the 49th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the landmark Supreme Court decision which legalized abortions nationwide. Many fear the Supreme Court could overturn the decision this year. We'll look at the new documentary, The Janes, about a collective of women in Chicago who built an underground service for women seeking an abortion before Roe. We'll speak to the filmmakers as well as Heather Booth. Heather Booth, who helped found Jane when she was a college student in Chicago.
We created a collective called The Janes. And between 1965 and 1973, the women of Jane themselves learned how and performed over 11,000 abortions.
Plus, we go to the Pacific island nation of Tonga as aid flights continue to arrive after a massive underwater volcano exploded, blanketing Tonga in ash and generating huge tsunami waves. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A British judge has ruled WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange can appeal a December court decision to extradite him to the U.S. Assange faces espionage charges and up to 175 years in prison for publishing evidence of U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. His fiancée, Stella Morris, just spoke in front of the courthouse.
Certified that we had raised point of law of general public importance, and that the Supreme Court has good grounds to hear this appeal. The situation now is that the Supreme Court has to decide whether it will hear the appeal. But make no mistake, we won today in court.
Julian Assange's lawyers and advocates have warned his mental and physical health have been steadily deteriorating, and a lower court judge last year ruled Assange should not be extradited as he posed a possible suicide risk if locked up in the United States. In pandemic news, U.S. health officials say they're cautiously optimistic the Omicron-fueled surge will soon pass its peak, though many hospitals continue to be overwhelmed with patients, and the country is still averaging over 2,000 deaths per day. In legal news, a federal judge on Friday blocked the Biden administration's vaccine mandate for federal workers and contractors. The Justice Department's appealed the ruling, which could end up at the Supreme Court. The White House says about 98% of government workers have already been vaccinated. the U.S. State Department's reducing non-essential personnel at its embassy in Ukraine and has ordered family members of diplomats to leave, citing a threat of Russian military action. President Biden's reportedly now weighing the possibility of sending up to 5,000 U.S. troops to the region and deploying warships and aircraft to NATO ally countries. NATO members say they have put forces on standby. The U.S. also sent a new delivery of military equipment to Ukraine. This comes after talks between Secretary of State Antony Blinken and his counterpart, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, Friday failed to make any breakthroughs on the escalating tensions at the Russia-Ukraine border, where some 100,000 Russian troops have been amassed. Blinken is joining a meeting of European Union foreign ministers today over the crisis. In Yemen, scores of people are dead after the U.S.-supported Saudi-led coalition launched a heavy aerial assault on territory controlled by Houthi rebels. One attack Friday destroyed a prison in northern Yemen near the Saudi border, with reports of 82 killed and dozens more trapped under the